Thank you very much, David. Hopefully you can all see a brighter future, both figuratively and on your screen now.
Yes.
So to build on what Kathy has shared with you, I want to try and take a look at sort of the three chapters of where we are today, looking at the pre-pandemic, current position and post-pandemic concept. So the pre-pandemic era, if you like, in terms of children and young people's mental health. As Kathy said, the 2020 NHS Digital Survey, which happened just into the start of the pandemic, showed that there was a rise over 3 years from 1 in 9 to 1 in 6 school-aged children having a diagnosable mental illness. And suicide was recognized as a leading cause of death between 5 and 19-year-olds, which has been rising for the best part of 10 years now. Conversely, in terms of investment into mental health research, as we'll see, children and young people's mental health is not the focus of where research is today, and that's a huge challenge, considering 75% of all mental health problems develop before the age of 18. In terms of service delivery, we know that the mental health services are hugely stretched. Children's mental health services account for less than 1% of all of NHS spending, and the capacity of children and adolescent mental health services is under huge strain. 1 in 4 children referred to specialist mental health treatments are turned away, and 75% have such long waits that there's a detrimental impact on their mental health. That average wait time cruising above 12 months in recent years. We've also seen in the UK, and Jeremy Farrar pointed this out today in The Guardian, talking about the lack of continued investment in research. Mental health research has been flat for the best part of a decade here in the UK, and only or less than 4% of all of that spending is actually on prevention of mental illness. To put it in context, around £9 is spent per person with a mental health diagnosis, compared to over £300 per cancer patient being spent in research terms. So this huge inequality between physical and mental health was something we recognized way before the pandemic began. So what is the impact of the lockdown and the pandemic been? And it's fitting that we meet 12 months on from the start of the very first lockdown here in the UK. I think it's been said early on that we were all in the same storm, but I think we can all firmly agree that we've all been in very different boats. Children and young people, through a number of different research projects, have been highlighted as some of the most vulnerable groups in terms of impact towards mental health, as well as women, groups from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and particularly those that have recently just faced crisis financially. In terms of young people's education, we know that between 12 and 25% of children and young people lacked some sort of tools or elements of engagement they required to properly engage while schools were closed. And the NSPCC reported an all-time peak increase of 32% in distress calls to their helpline during the first national lockdown. So just as Kathy has pointed out, there have been some groups that started well and continue to do well, but those groups that started from a further back position have been continued to be detrimented. And this actually comes from the Emerging Minds partnership, some of the work that Kathy has been doing herself, actually. And I think one of the stark elements I've seen through the pandemic, both in terms of the research that's been done, but also, you know, when we look at some of the press conferences that have been held by government, is the lack of voice for young people. And these two comments in particular from the Emerging Minds work stood out to me. One on the left, with a certain level of hopefulness that things have been tough, but we can move forward. But a recognition on the right there that without significant change in understanding of mental health and children and young people's mental health in government, then we're unlikely to see much change for the future. So chapter three, post-pandemic world, an endemic world, whatever phrase you want to use, what do we need to make a brighter future? So at MQ, we've just launched our new research plan with three thematic areas that we believe need to be invested into. The first, entitled Thriving in a Post-Pandemic World, is the work we're carrying out right now, and I'll talk more in a second about understanding the impact and what we're doing about that. The second is one entitled Gone Too Soon, so looking at how we invest more money into research to reduce the mortality gap, both caused because of death by suicide, as we saw from the earlier slides, but also the interplay between physical and mental health. Those with a mental health diagnosis on the whole die 15 years earlier than their mentally healthy peers because of comorbidity between physical and mental health. And if you caught this morning the post-hospitalization COVID report that came out from the first 1,000 patients, we can see again the link between contracting COVID, physical illness, respiratory illness, as we thought it was, going into hospital, and 25% of those people 5 months on having a diagnosis of depression, and around 12% 5 months on being diagnosed with PTSD. The third area that we'll be launching is one referred to as Out of the Shadows, looking at radical treatments of depression, the thing that has been earmarked by 2030 to be the biggest global burden of disease worldwide. COVID hasn't overtaken that by any stretch. And we see increasing reports and results from research that depression is on the increase within children and young people as well. At the start of the year, we invested a further £750,000 into three new fellowships, one specifically a longitudinal study looking at the impact of COVID-19 pandemic as a stressor on young people's mental health, and two other studies into what we think are two of the biggest areas of children and young people's mental health today. We're also carrying out some policy and advocacy work. We'll be releasing a report next month entitled The COVID Generation as part of the all-party parliamentary group work with over 25 different researchers and authors who've submitted evidence to that publication. And that will bring together all of the thinking that we think is out there and present a way forward in terms of a policy recommendation. We're also working in partnership with the Royal Foundation and a wider group of researchers that Gregor, our next speaker, is also supporting a PhD, looking at the inequities in mental health research exacerbated by COVID-19. We recognize that particularly Black females are almost non-existent within research studies. And so there's more to be done to make sure that we get fully representative data to understand the true impact of something like the pandemic. So some of my thoughts on what the way forward looks like, perhaps. On the bottom right, you know, we've heard the political aspiration to build back better. It's a wonderful alliterated three-worded phrase. But if we're really going to make that a reality, then we've got to take a holistic approach and a whole child approach to understand that. I've a few thoughts from me. I think the future planning by government and civil society has to connect more clearly so that we have real-time understanding of what's happening. There's some fantastic work coming out of Scotland around the concepts like closed childcare clusters that look at how you can keep education open and well no matter what's going on. Ideas around hybrid and virtual learning for those with ADHD and autism, two groups that have responded very differently to the pandemic. I think there's a huge call we need to make on greater access to routinely collected data so that we can have a more live approach and understanding of how the policies we're making impact children and young people. And there's got to be a greater investment in mental health research. It's as simple as that. I'll pause my thoughts there. And with this final thought on investment in prevention and early intervention, I imagine I tee up Gregor Henderson fairly well for the next slot. Thank you very much, everybody.